Very good. Welcome, Council, and those who are participating, listening in. This is number two of our panel today of three oral matters. File A211267, Progressive Insurance, is the respondent versus Justin Abel et al. Appellants. And we are appearing remotely. We're recording the proceeding, so any other recording is prohibited, but our recording will be available within 24 hours on the Judicial Branch's website. And both counsel, you should be able to see the clock in a corner somewhere on your screen. And if not, let me know. If we have any difficulty during the discussion this morning where we lose your audio, more importantly than video, I suppose, but if we cannot hear you anymore, the marshal knows to stop the clock so that we may resume when we're reconnected. Judges Bradfold and Klapphockey are joining me, Judge Sleater, in this second matter. We do ask counsel to identify yourself for the record when you begin as well. And so, counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jordan Weir, and I'm from appearing on behalf of the appellants Aubrey Abel and Justin Abel, as noted by Your Honor. May it please the court, the primary issue on appeal in this case, the legal question for this court, is whether a student who was away for school, recently graduated from high school, with no permanent plans in place, no plan whatsoever to remain where they currently reside as they attend school, and the stated intent to return home to their parents' home following school remains a member of their parents' household for the purposes of insurance coverage. The issue is one that is legal, so this court's standard of review is de novo. Secondarily, the question posed for this court is again a legal question, and that is whether the district court improperly weighed evidence and weighed the credibility of the witnesses and the evidence presented in deciding that summary judgment was appropriate for the insurance company, and summary judgment was denied as to the appellants today, or the insureds. Aubrey Abel is entitled to underinsured motorist coverage as a matter of both Minnesota law as well as the Progressive policy in question. She always intended to live with her parents. She always considered her parents' home her home. And in her own words at her deposition, "I always considered my home in Sabin my home, and I was going to return to Sabin eventually." Minnesota law requires the courts to give great deference to protection of insureds in favor of finding coverage. And Aubrey Abel has said it consistently and credibly, time and time again, that she considered her parents' home her permanent home, and that her stay in Harvey was temporary only, never permanent. She was going to leave once she was done with school.
So counsel, if you would turn to the evidence that the Progressive relies on and the district court relied on. And I think that is at least attached to your appellant's brief as 22 and 23 of your addendum, right? So that's Aubrey's deposition testimony where she says she's going to get a degree and move back. And are you going to move? What's your reason for moving back to with your parents to get a better job? And the questioning about if that required to move back to your parents' house in Sabin, that's what you do. But if it would not require that, you go to Fargo, would you do that? And she says, "I don't know." I mean, your description of the testimony, I don't think is quite accurate, because Aubrey goes back and forth in her deposition testimony, depending on the question that she's asked. So she's asked some hypotheticals, really. If you get a job in Fargo, will you necessarily go back to Sabin? She might. Sabin's not that far away from Fargo, but she might not. That's what she's saying. So I'm not quite sure you're embracing the record as we have it in front of us. So would you address that?
Sure. Well, Your Honor, you're weighing the evidence. And that's what the district court did, was weigh what the statements on the record were in response to questions proposed or posed by opposing counsel. Cross-examination. It was a discovery deposition. It was not on direct testimony because this case has not been posed to the district court at trial. Aubrey Abel, being a lay person, one with cognitive deficits, was doing her best to better herself, was going to school through her employer, did her best to answer those questions as they were posed. And the reason why I am embracing exactly what Your Honor has just mentioned as we're going back and forth is what I said in opening. She had no permanent plan. She did not know what she would do following school. She knew that she would leave Harvey, and she considered it all along as the policy requires. The policy states, asks, what is the intent of your adult child who is temporarily away from home? And her question has always been, I intended that my home in Sabin was my permanent home, not in Harvey.
So, counsel, your response to that indicated that the problem with my question and with the district court's reasoning is that it involves weighing the evidence and taking the evidence that is in a light that is not most favorable to Aubrey, the non-moving party, right? Here's my problem with that legally. So the first issue you laid out for us is really essentially asking us, this court, as you did the district court, to grant summary judgment in your favor on the resident relative issue. And that you're right, that does not involve weighing evidence. It has to be basically, the evidence can only be viewed one way. And that's my question to you. You seem to be conceding now that the evidence can be seen both ways because her testimony is, I don't know, as opposed to, I clearly intend to move back to save it. She says, sure. I don't know.
Well, those are two different issues. There are two different questions. And we've asked the court to address both issues. Of course, our primary goal here, as stated in our briefing and as I mentioned in opening, is that the court would grant summary judgment or grant a judgment in favor of coverage and reverse summary judgment against Aubrey Abel. And in that respect, we do believe that the evidence was improperly weighed and that the court, the case should be remanded at the very least for a trial on the merits for the fact finder to issue findings of fact.
Well, not only at the least, that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, as Judge Raffel just pointed out, to grant summary judgment in your favor, which you requested here, suffers from the same problem that affirming the summary judgment here is. That is, it requires some weighing of the evidence. Do you agree?
Sure. And I was just going to.
That means you shouldn't get summary judgment either. So.
And
we shouldn't
just
spend any time
aspect.
Talking about.
Go My ahead. Apologies. My apologies, Your Honor. I did not mean to interrupt you.
It's fine.
And that was just that is the second issue, and that comes to the question. And I believe that our position is that it's up to her stated intent under these circumstances that case law has addressed time and again, and always in favor of finding coverage. Is that it's not enough, as the district court and as Progressive says, that, well, Aubrey, we just don't believe you. The policy itself asks, what is your intent? And that is the actual verbiage within the policy. And that's as the courts have given great deference to and in favor of finding coverage for insureds. That the question should not be, you know, I just don't believe you intended to leave Harvey. It's not necessarily that she intended to go back to Sabin. It's that at the time she was in this accident, she was in Harvey temporarily only for her education. Now, that question is challenged by both the district court and the Progressive on appeal here.
I gather that you're agreeing with us that you're not entitled to summary judgment. What you're maybe entitled to is a trial.
Well, no, Your Honor, we do ask for summary judgment because, again, as I
thought you just covered that since summary judgment requires or disallows the weighing of evidence, you want to exclude some evidence and include other evidence, do the same weighing thing that you're objecting to by asking for summary judgment. So, well, that's why don't we move on? Why you're not entitled to summary judgment any more than the other party is if there's got to be weighing of evidence. Isn't that fair?
Well, it's not unfair, Your Honor. but it does ask a separate question, a different question, and maybe I'm just not getting it across very clearly.
But it seems to me you're asking for summary judgment, and we've already established that it will require weighing of evidence and suffers from the same defect you're complaining about in terms of the grant of summary judgment here. So why don't we just spend time talking about whether or not you're entitled to a trial on these fact questions instead of messing it up by going back to summary judgment?
Sure. Well, and just very briefly, it's because I don't believe it's proper as a matter of law, as a matter of the appropriate interpretation of the unambiguous insurance policy, that we weigh whether we believe Aubrey Abel stated intent or not. That's the reason why we would ask that summary judgment be granted in her favor, in favor of finding for coverage. But then moving on to, as it seems the court is primarily interested in the issues of fact, and primarily the issues that were relied upon by the district court in granting summary judgment, and why I believe that at the very least it should be remanded back to the court for a trial on the merits, is because the court, as stated throughout their memorandum and order, as provided in our addendum, is that, quote, she never gave her employer notice of termination or to leave her employment. She had no plans to permanently reside in Harvey, but did not yet have fixed plans to move back to Sabin. And any time she was in Sabin while she lived in Harvey or had her residence in Harvey and was going to school, she intended to return to Harvey. Those are all logical fallacies asking the wrong question altogether. Because the point is any college student, is that when they visit their home frequently, their parents' home, of course they intend to return. Of course they maintain employment. And it seems to me that the point of the district court made is that, well, it's a bit different, her situation, than that of someone who attends, say, a four-year university like NDSU or the University of Minnesota. And she had a full-time job, therefore she should be treated differently. But that's not the law. And that's not how the case law has interpreted this time and again by our courts on appeal.
Counsel, I'd like to address a legal issue on the questions of fact that you're now arguing. So the district court rejected the second affidavit that was submitted by Aubrey because the district court found it to be self-serving. It was submitted after her deposition, and at least portions of it are specifically going to this issue of her intent to return and her intention about permanent residency in her parents' home. And the district court found that that was not appropriate under the Banbury case, which you do talk about in your brief, and I appreciate that. Thank you. I've read that. I guess what I'm trying to understand is Banbury says that a subsequent affidavit may raise factual issues where the deposition itself reveals confusion or mistake. Do you think that language applies here and the district court made a mistake in rejecting the entirety of the second affidavit?
Well, I certainly believe that the district court made that mistake, among others. But with respect to, in particular, the rejection in whole of the affidavit, I think it's safe to say that it was a summary rejection. The district court does not go through a detailed analysis of the Banbury case like Your Honor just did. In fact, there's just a very, very small quote there, and then there's a summary rejection of the affidavit altogether. In providing that it's, or stating that it's self-serving.
I guess what I'm looking at, counsel, is a more specific response to my question. I think you're familiar with the part of Banbury I'm talking about. The judge, our court there specifically says that, I think it's our court, specifically says that it is appropriate to look at a subsequent affidavit where there is confusion in the deposition. And that's what I think Judge Klopike and I have just been talking to you about. Seems to us there's some ambiguity in Aubrey's answers in the deposition about her intent to return. So doesn't that support actually admission of the second affidavit under Banbury?
Well, it does, Your Honor, and I appreciate that. I apologize for going. I was not trying to go around the issue. My answer is that it absolutely supports listening to the affidavit. And in addition to that, I don't agree, as I provide in our briefing, I don't agree that the affidavit just directly contradicts what her statements were on the record in the deposition. She does answer the questions. Part of the reason for any confusion or mistake would be the questions posed, again, by opposing counsel in a manner of cross-examination. And it's getting at separate issues from those focused upon by, of course, Aubrey herself and the law regarding whether you're entitled to coverage while you're away from home temporarily or temporarily away altogether. And I think it's safe to say that any college student doesn't necessarily intend to return to their parents' home. In fact, perhaps that's the very reason they go to school in the first place, is to establish themselves. But as our courts have weighed in Morgan, Wood, Shore, and Carson, those college students are entitled to coverage as a matter of law, not just a matter of weighing the facts or the merits of the case. The cases relied upon by Progressive in this instance, first of all, they were determined as issues of after trial and issues of fact. And I'm running out of time here. I know that I have 5 minutes reserved and certainly would like to answer or address any other questions, but for the reasons provided in our briefing and today, we respectfully request that the judgment of the court be reversed. Thank you.
Judge Sleater, if I could just ask one question of Mr. Weir that he could think
certainly
about for rebuttal.
You may.
So if you would address the second affidavit as to Aubrey's deposition statements, and this is for your rebuttal, her deposition statements as to paying utilities and then the affidavit as to who paid utilities. And I'm sure that Mr. Bayless is going to address this because it seems to me that was an important part of his briefing. So then I would love to hear from you as well and your rebuttal. Thank you.
Very well then, counsel for respondent, you may identify yourself and then you may proceed.
Hey, please the court. My name is Ken Bayless and I represent Progressive Insurance Company. The question presented by this case is whether when someone moves away from home after school and obtains full-time employment elsewhere and obtains professional certifications that will further that career, whether that person has still retained residency in her home, in her parents' home. In this case, the appellant did not retain that residency.
I'm sorry to interrupt your statement of the issue, but it seems to me that what Mr. Weir is suggesting, and it seems our case law suggests, that student status is important here. You made quick reference to obtained certification. Isn't it accurate on this record that Aubrey was actually a student? I mean, she's an employed student, and her employer is paying, her Harvey employer is paying for her to go to school, but she's a student, right?
This is not the traditional student situation.
Counsel, is she a student?
She's taking an online certification course for a professional certification that she needs for her job.
She's a student, right? She's a student of Minot State. Is that a
that's correct?
That's correct,
Your Honor.
Right?
Yeah, she's taking an online course at Minot State, right, and therefore
so
be a student to that extent.
Incorporate that into your analysis of the issue, please. I'd appreciate that.
Oh, certainly.
Certainly reflected in the case law significantly on this issue.
Right. But this case isn't like the traditional case that we've had through the decades. If you look at the older cases that involve students, what they involve is a student who has actually gone off to college and then come back home and then is residing in the home for whether it be 2 weeks or 2 months or 3 months in the various cases. And then the question is, OK, they were a student. They came back home. How long do they have to stay in the home in order to qualify as a student? And that was the case in the Victoria case. That was the situation also in the Rosenberger case. It was also the situation in the Fruchtman case. In all those cases, we have people who are students who go away to college. Here, the appellant did not go to a college campus. She went to another location. She went to the place where her grandparents lived, which was 70 miles away from the campus, and she never went to the campus. And the reason she went to visit with her grandparents was because she wanted to initially take care of her grandparents. Then she got a full-time job. And her courses are all online courses that don't require physical attendance in another location.
So, counsel, you're again sidestepping the fact that it's this employer, the Harvey employer, who paid for her to go to school at Minot State.
Your Honor, I think
Do you have any evidence in the record that they would have continued to pay her education if she had moved and not worked for them?
I think that weighs in favor of concluding that she's not a resident in Sabin, Minnesota, because...
Well, perhaps if we were not on summary judgment, you might be right. If you had argued this to a jury might totally agree with you. But how, when we view the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, how would we disregard the fact that it is her Harvey employer who is paying for her to do these online classes, paying her as an employee as well as paying for those classes?
Correct. And that's a tie to Harvey, and it's not a tie to Sabin, Minnesota. So would support, we believe, the respondent's position.
Will you state that in light of the case law on summary judgment? I think you're familiar with it, aren't you, that we have to view the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party?
I certainly, yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
What I'm saying is the case, there's never been a case. None of the cases that the Supreme Court has addressed or this court has addressed have involved students who have not gone off to some remote campus and then are returning home. Those cases have involved that. They haven't involved...
Oh, I'm sorry, counsel. I thought the Shore case actually deals with a Wisconsin mother being and the son going to school in Jackson, Minnesota. And that is affirming the judgment, actually, for the insured. Now, that is a jury finding. So it's a different case from this one. It suggests to me that perhaps this is a question of fact in this scenario.
On this, just to separate the issues here, on the issue of the nature of the education that he was undertaking, it was a college in Jackson, Minnesota that he attended. So he actually went to Jackson, and that's the reason that he was in Jackson. And then his time was split between his mother's house and his father's house. But this is a different situation. This is one where somebody's gone to a location that is not the location of the school, has a full-time job. And the key... Really, the key testimony in this case is found at RA 33, respondent's addendum, page 33, where she talks about, well, what are you planning to do? And the question is asked, so you just testified that your goal while obtaining your education was to secure permanent employment or get a good job. You said, correct? Yes. Did you have any intent, or I guess, did you know at that time where the permanent employment was going to be or where you anticipated to look for permanent employment? No. So what she's saying is she's doing what most people do. She's got a job. If she has another job opportunity, she's going to accept that job, wherever that job may be. Now,
I'd like you to look at the testimony that the district court relied on, which actually was included in the appellant's brief as well. Now that's on, and I'm looking at the appellant's addendum. So 23, it's deposition page 26. So there, the district court actually stated in its order that Aubrey had testified that she had no set or definite plan to move back to Sabin, which is a question that was asked of her at the deposition. And do you remember her answer? Her answer was no.
Right.
I was going to move back eventually. Now, I appreciate that you quibble with that word eventually, which again, you know, if you listen to my questions, I'm not asking whether summary judgment for Aubrey is appropriate. I'm asking whether summary judgment for Progressive is appropriate, because it seems to me that there is more than one way to look at the testimony that Aubrey gave at this deposition, which under the standard for summary judgment means summary judgment should not have been granted. It is a question of fact for the jury.
Except that it's an admission that she made during the course of the deposition.
She admitted no in response to your question. Oh, I don't know if it was you, but in response to Progressive's question about whether she had a definite plan. The district court did not present it that way. The district court said she admitted she had no definite plan. She didn't admit anything. She said no.
She doesn't have a plan to go back to Sabin, is what she says later in the deposition. And I see this as like a situation where you ask somebody, did you slip on the ice? Did you slip on the ice? And they say, yeah, I slipped on the ice. I slipped on the ice. And then you keep pursuing it and you find out they say in the deposition later on, well, I slipped on the ice or I tripped over my foot and I don't know which one. Well, having the fact they earlier said that they slipped on the ice isn't going to be sufficient to say, wait, they didn't admit it. Here she admits candidly in a logical manner what would happen in a situation like this where someone has obtained employment in a field and then is going to look for her next job opportunity after she has the certification. This happened at the end of the deposition. after those earlier statements were made and is in the nature of an admission that we believe is dispositive of the issues.
Mr. Bayless, I'm going back to the actual answer that she gave that Judge Bradfield's referring to. The no, is it fair to say there was no set or definite plan? No, I was going to move back eventually. And that's consistent with the affidavit that the judge considered to be self-serving. But we can set that aside for a moment. Isn't it true that legally it's not important how long one decides to temporarily leave, but whether the intent is to return? And well, that would be inherently a fact issue for the fact finder to decide and to sort through all these ambiguities we're talking about. What do you mean you don't know? Well, what's the plan? And we see in the affidavit, well, I was never going to stay in Harvey and I was always intending to return home. Wouldn't that be the sort of thing that the jury would hear all those things? And then you and Mr. Weir would be arguing to the jury how they should interpret that.
Well, during the course of the deposition, she initially says what you've referenced, but then towards the end of the deposition, she gives a candid admission of what her actual intent is, which is to find a job and go where the job takes her.
So, counsel, I've had the chance while you were talking to Judge Sleater to look at the testimony that you just cited, RA-33. Would you turn to RA-34 and continue with Aubrey's testimony? Because she goes on to say in her answer to the question, she said, oh, I guess that's not exactly the next page because I didn't get all the pages. It's now page 65, but it's the next page in your addendum. And in your addendum, she testifies, I wanted to leave Harvey after I got an education or a degree. The question is, so it was your intent to stay there until the programming was done? She answers, correct. And then the question, and then did you know what your intent was after the programming was done? Where you were going to land or look for a job? No, I didn't know where I was going to work after that was finished. She's saying she doesn't know where she's going to work. She's not asked the question about where she intends to reside or whether she considers today, you know, while she's a student, her permanent residency to be in her parents' household.
Right. And that supports the respondent's position because she's saying she doesn't know where she's going to go. She doesn't know that she's going back to Sabin, which is dispositive of the issue.
My point is not that she's entitled to summary judgment. My question, like Judge Sleater's, is whether we have a question of fact here for the jury.
Your Honor, I don't believe so, because I believe that the statement that you just referenced and the statement found at RA-33 constitute her candid admission of what her situation was, which directly contradicts the notion that she's going back to Sabin. It says, I'm going to get it. Once I have my degree, I'm going to get a job and go where it takes me, which means that her ties are not to Sabin. They're to whatever location it may be that she subsequently gets a job, which could be anywhere. So we think that testimony is so strong that it could be interpreted in only one manner, and therefore there's not a fact issue that could result in the denial of the summary judgment motion and reverse it.
So, counsel, you heard my questions about the Banbury case, which the, you know, go to rejection of the second affidavit. I didn't see you brief that issue, although it was laid out quite well, I thought, by the appellant's brief. So what's your position on the district court's decision to completely reject the second affidavit?
I think it was appropriate for the district court to completely reject the second affidavit, because I do think that it was a rejection in toto of her testimony in her deposition at page 59 of her deposition transcript, and directly contradicted what she had said, and not a clarification.
On what point? What did it directly contradict?
What her intentions were upon completing the course and then obtaining employment, which would determine where she was going to reside.
What about payment of utilities?
What's your question regarding payment?
My question is the second affidavit, should it be rejected as self-serving and a contradiction of her deposition testimony on the point of who paid utilities for her apartment?
I think that it's only self-serving and contradictory to the extent that it contradicts the statement she made at page 59 of her deposition transcript.
That she did not know who paid her utilities? That's what she testified to two things in her deposition, that she didn't know whether she paid her utilities. And she also testified if she paid, if there were utilities, she paid them. Because I think what she's implying is in some apartments, you pay the utilities as part of the rent and some you don't. We don't even know which utilities we're talking about. There are a bunch of different types of utilities, right?
Your Honor, without focusing unduly on utilities, I would note that she was self-sufficient. She was living by herself. She was paying her own rent, and she had left the home, and
My question, which is about the second affidavit. Okay, so you think it should be disregarded as to her statements about what is her intention to return to save it, right?
Correct.
But not on other points that are in the second affidavit that are not touched on.
Well, to the extent they directly contradict them, I would agree that that should be disregarded.
Yeah, but if she didn't testify on a subject and the affidavit goes to that subject, then the district court should look. I mean, it's evidence the appellant offered, right?
Your Honor, I agree with that point, which is if there's something that she hasn't testified to that isn't flatly contradicted by the subsequent affidavit, that it would be properly considered by the district court. I agree with that.
Mr. Bayless, can I confirm one other point about that second affidavit? And you're referring to paragraph number 12. My only permanent intent was to return to Sabin once I completed my education. Would not to be a flat contradiction somewhere in the transcript, she would have to indicate my only permanent intention was to be live somewhere other than Sabin?
Well, I think she does that at page RA33, where she talks about once I get permanent employment elsewhere, that's where I'm going to go. That does contradict.
Does that preclude returning to Sabin if she gets employment in Fargo, for example?
Well, she doesn't know at the time where the employment is going to be, is what she says in her deposition, Your Honor.
Right. But the case law, and that's what the judge seemed to rely on in Barbary, it would have to directly contradict. And so, as we're saying, we're trying to read and understand the words of a transcript answer to depending on the question and so forth. And it seems to me to fit that standard of being self-serving, it would have to directly contradict. And I just don't see that in those words you're pointing to. She's being honest. She doesn't know what's going to happen, which that's a good, honest answer most college students, but that doesn't separate her from any of the case law, I assume, on what a college student, after I'm done with my technical school in Jackson, where do you want to go? Well, I'm going to look for work. I'm not following how.
Your Honor, I would say that if you say that I'm looking for permanent employment and I'm going to go where the permanent employment is, that you're saying something different than once I get done with my education, I'm going back to Sabin. Those are two different things, Your Honor. And they do contradict themselves. I'm through my time. Unless the court has some other questions, I'll conclude and ask that the court affirm the decision of the trial court.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Bayless. Mr. Weir, you will have 5 minutes. And as soon as you see, there it is on the clock, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I want to get right, Judge Bradfold, you had the question about utilities, addressing utilities. But before I forget, and because it's been a hot subject response, as a matter of law, our courts have decided that the question is not whether they permanently intended to return home from college. In fact, the court finds as a matter of law that students who don't know what their plan is going forward are entitled to coverage. That's a finding of law in Morgan versus Illinois Farmers, finding of law in Wood versus Mutual Service, a finding of law in Scarston v. Dairyland, a finding of law in Shore v. West Bend. It's happened time and time again. It's not a matter of whether you intend to return home, and we establish you intend to return home. The question is there an intent to permanently reside elsewhere? And that follows with the policy language. It's not, did they intend to return home for sure, guaranteed? The policy language, unequivocally, is as a relative, if they intend to continue to reside in your household, present tense, continue to reside at the time that they're in school. So that, of course, inherently means we assume that you can intend to continue to be a member of your parents' household while you're a college student. And that makes perfect sense because, of course, college students are still relying upon their parents. And that's what our case law recognizes. Now, moving to Judge Bradfield, you left me with this task of finding or addressing the utility issue. And I have to confess that I'm not sure that I've necessarily made it through the record and found the question for the question and response. But as a matter of the affidavit itself, my parents assisted me with utilities. It paid for my health care. It states I paid for my utilities, paid for my cell phone service, and paid for automotive insurance. The question on the deposition was, who was responsible for utilities at the Harvey location? She's never asked by counsel, and unfairly, I would suggest. She's never asked, well, did your parents help you? Did your parents assist you with paying for utilities? Did your parents pay for your cell phone bill, your health care insurance?
Counsel, just so the record is clear, the statement in Aubrey's affidavit, and I'm talking about the second affidavit, is on paragraph 17, she's referring to my parents, they paid for my health care, paid for utilities, and paid for my cell phone service. It doesn't say helped.
That's okay. Correct, Your Honor. And I apologize. It certainly did not mean to make that.
That's fine. I just like the record to be clear. And then as for her deposition testimony, were you able to locate that, counsel?
Yes, and I'm at our addendum, page 23 to our addendum. My apologies, I missed my spot. I was asked, in Harvey, who would be responsible for the utilities? And she answers, I would. Page 26 of our addendum. If there is any type of utilities or cable or internet or something at your apartment, who would have been responsible for paying that?
Right. And then if you would look at the page before that, A25, addendum 25, line 21, were there any utilities associated with that? Again, the apartment, water, electric, anything like that? And her answer was, I don't remember, which I think is why the question on the next page that you were just referring to was an if question, if there was any type of utilities, because she doesn't remember, right?
Well, sure. My issue isn't that the if question. My issue is that on direct, she'd be asked the follow-up, would your parents assist you with that? And I don't believe that Aubrey was tailoring, you know, that my parents paid, that means they paid all of them. Well, because that issue was never presented on summary judgment. There was never getting that down into the weeds of the facts. Okay, well, what percentage of the utilities did they pay? Would they pay it in time and time again, or would they pay it just every once in a while when you needed assistance? And as Your Honor pointed out, we don't get into the different types of utilities either. But beyond that, and undisputed, is that healthcare was paid by parents. Automotive insurance, her parents thought they had paid for it on her behalf. Cell phone bill, they had paid on her behalf. And that is only one factor, by the way. It's only one factor in the considerations of residency is self-sufficiency. Your intent, and it's not, again, as a matter of law, it's not an intent to necessarily. I guarantee I'm returning home from college. By the way, that would eliminate coverage for all college students, unless they said, I'm going to go obtain my degree. And after I obtain my degree, which of course is indisputably to obtain better employment, I'm going to return home and live with my parents. For those reasons and the reasons provided in the briefing, Your Honor, unless Your Honors have additional questions, we respectfully request that the court reverse the summary judgment denied against our the Ables. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions this morning.